Wednesday, April 13th. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I am the chair of the Public Service Commission, and I will officially call this meeting to order. My gavel is my knuckle today. We're gathered from all over the places doing this remotely because of this snowstorm. I am personally not even in Bismarck. I left on Sunday for a Ashley, you'll need to mute yourself. All participants need to be muted, please. Thank you. I am in New Mexico for a, it's called a Current Issues Conference. It's sponsored every year by the Center for Public Utilities in New Mexico State. And it's a really great conference. There's about 40 commissioners from throughout the country here. And I was supposed to just be here on Monday and head back, but my flight got canceled on Tuesday. It's been canceled today. I'm just hoping that I will be able to get back home tomorrow if the snow breaks. So I'm calling in remotely. It's been a really great conference. There's a wonderful agenda. I moderated a panel yesterday on the clean energy transition. We had some really great conversations about some of the expectations and timelines that need to be adjusted on that transition. There was a really good panel on critical minerals. Learned a lot about some of the restraints that are going to exist in developing a lot of the renewables and batteries just because of the critical minerals supply. Lots of talk on broadband, some next-gen nuclear energy conversations, and a lot on the Infrastructure and Jobs Act. So it's a really great conference. I do regret not being home, but I'm able to manage here pretty well. However, I didn't bring my laptop because I wasn't supposed to be here very long. And so I'm doing all of this meeting by my phone. I also don't have any of my paperwork. So I'm going to be toggling back and forth between being on screen and being off screen so I can read things on my phone. So with that, Commissioner Crisman, do you have any opening comments?
I do not. I guess I'll just say one thing. I don't know if we have anybody connected to ranchers out there, but I've been through these kinds of things in my past life, and while the moisture is certainly appreciated and necessary, these are very stressful and difficult times for the ranching industry when people have little calves out there, and that's just a tough time. So I hope we're all praying for those guys.
Thank you, Randy, for sure. And I want to give a shout out to our staff for pulling this meeting together virtually. It's a blessing that we have this capacity and capability, and it's helpful to be able to pull that in short notice like this. And I really hope everybody is staying put and staying safe back home. So, Sherry, any opening comments from you?
Well, good morning. I want to echo your comments. I know staff has gone above and beyond on connectivity and working through some issues. Last commissioner meeting, I talked about the call before you dig. And I'm just going to say, even though we might not be digging in the soil and doing construction, just be safe out there as you're shoveling and getting yourself out there into the ranchers out there and emergency responders, everyone who's still working to keep us all safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve and Matt, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Are you guys hearing that? Is that from one of us?
I would recommend that it's not coming from there. Matt, is it coming from the hearing room by any chance?
It might be.
Okay. All right. Well, just as long as everybody is on mute when not participating. I don't know that Randy and Sherry and I need to be on mute, but certainly all others who are on the line need to be muted. Okay, let's see, moving into the agenda items. We have a number of items on consent. And what I want to call to everybody's attention, just a couple of those items, and that is the proposed rules for cybersecurity reporting and integrated resource planning. Jack, great job on putting those rules together, and staff who helped him. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with industry on both of those so that we get those rules right. And I think that you've done a good job thinking through a lot of the important issues, both on the integrated resource planning and on the cybersecurity, but there's always things we don't think about, and I really look forward to the conversation with industry to get those as good as we can and then finalize them. So with that, I move passage of all the items on consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. All right, moving into the regular agenda. Randy, you're the only one with items on the regular agenda, so I'll pass it over to you. I'm going to go off screen right now, too, so I can look at my notes.
Randy, you're muted.
We can't hear you, Randy.
Okay. I move the commission approve bond release number 3 to surface coal mining permit NAFK 8405 held by the Falkirk Mining Company for the Falkirk Mine to release all reclamation liabilities on 92.3 acres of land located in portions of section 23 and 24, Township 146 North, Range 82 West, McLean County. No monetary release is being requested since the current bond amount is based on the worst case reclamation condition for this permit and others at the Falkirk Mine. This release will become effective May 13th, 2022, unless a formal hearing is requested in Falkirk Mining Company bond release number 3, permit NAFK 8405, application case number RC-21-221.
Second.
So you'd think with a motion that long, it would be pretty well explained, but I do want to give you and the public a few other details. This tract is located 2.5 miles east and then a little bit south of Underwood. So it's just south of Highway 200, like that, you know, if you were going from Underwood to Turtle Lake. The 22.5 acres of this 92 were affected by mining. And they were reclaimed to 11.7 acres of native grassland, 4 acres of cropland, and 6.6 acres of industrial slash commercial. And that 6.6 acres, that is a portion that was previously disturbed, abandoned mine land. The remaining 70 acres were not disturbed by mining and includes native grasslands, woodlands, and some other abandoned mine land. So just because this land was into a permit, if it was not disturbed by modern mining, it still is considered abandoned mine land and falls under the pre-reclamation laws. So this tract is owned by the North Dakota Department of Transportation and is part of a larger land transfer agreement known as the Coal Lake Transfer. Falkirk entered into that agreement in 2009 to donate just under 730 acres of land bordering Coal Lake to the Department of Transportation. The transfer allowed the establishment of what is known as the Coal Lake Wildlife Management Area to mitigate NOMO managed mow acres within the rights of way of state highway system in McLean County. For those of you who don't recall or are lucky enough to be too young to recall, Highway 83, where it goes through McLean County, was once, thanks to the genius ideas of some environmentalists, a no-mow area. And growing up in Hazen, when we sometimes took that road to Bismarck, we used to refer to it as the killing zone because there were dead deer and raccoons and skunks and pheasants and everything else you could imagine on there. And it was a tragedy for the wildlife to have a wildlife area bordering busy highways. And it was, of course, absurd for automobile owners and insurance companies. So we got rid of it, but of course, you still have to mitigate it then. And so we have this very nice wildlife management area, which is away from the busy highway, known as Coal Lake Wildlife Management Area. So zoning change from agricultural and industrial zone to recreational zone for primitive recreational use was granted by the McLean County Commission in 2008 for the lands in this transfer. This 92 acres in this bond release is the only mine permitted acreage remaining in that area. So the Coal Lake Wildlife Management Area, it's owned by the Department of Transportation. It's operated by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. In this area, the mining disturbance within the base was actually created in 1994. The acreage disturbed by mining was respread with approximately 10 inches of topsoil, over 14 inches of subsoil, and these soil depths were field verified during the bond release inspection. The 22 acres affected by mining was subject to vegetative performance standards for recreational land use, and the liability period of fewer than 10 years for recreational areas is allowed by our rules. The formal bond release inspection was conducted on September 8th of last year. Reclamation staff, Falkirk Mining Company staff, and a representative of the Game and Fish Department participated in the inspection. Others were invited to participate, including other landowners, Department of Transportation, McLean County commissioners, and the North Dakota Soil Conservation Committee. However, they did not attend the inspection. And for those who did, no concerns were noted during the inspection. The notice of the final bond release application was published in the official county newspaper, which is the McLean County Independent, and also in the Bismarck Tribune for four consecutive weeks in September of last year. Again, no objections or concerns were received. Falkirk did not, as I mentioned in the motion, request any reduction in the bond amount because this permit is part of their consolidated bond area that includes other permits at the mine. So if approved, this bond release will become effective on May 13th unless a formal hearing is requested. And so the Reclamation Division has completed its review of the bond release application and recommends that it be approved, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Air Voice Wireless LLC, designated eligible carrier, application case number PU-22-158.
Second.
On March 29th, Air Voice Wireless filed this application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers. That is also known as Lifeline-only ETC designation. Air Voice proposes to provide service by reselling another carrier's facilities. The issues that we need to consider in this matter are three. One is whether the applicant is qualified. Number two is what universal service support area should be designated, if any. And number three is whether the designation of the applicant as an ETC is in the public interest. So people who are interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by May 23rd. If deemed appropriate, this commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
On this last one, before I make the motion and we get into discussion, I hope a new version has been sent out in like just the last few minutes. There was an update on it and the wrong one got sent out.
Randy, I did notice a new one sent to me, but I haven't had a chance to look at it. Would you be able to point out the main decision differences? Is it substantially different, or was there just some typos and that type of thing?
It's not real substantially different. To me, I don't have it in front of me either.
Commissioner,
to me, the big difference is in the order, the last item in the order indicates that Montana, Dakota, their existing tariffs must be updated in compliance with the commission's findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order.
Oh, okay.
And maybe Jack can interrupt if there was anything else significant.
Well, maybe we should move forward with the motion and all that, and we can get into the discussion after.
Okay. I could provide the one additional substantive change to the order if the commission would like it.
Sure, but let's do the motion first.
Okay. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company financial incentive power purchase agreement rates, case number PU-21-373.
Do we have a second on the motion? Failing to have a second on the motion is dead.
Mr. Secretary, I have a substitute motion I'd like to present.
Go ahead.
All right, give me 1 second. I have to pull it up. All right. I move the commission adopt a substitute findings of facts, conclusions of law and order in the Montana Dakota Utilities Company financial incentive power purchase agreement rates, case number PU-21-373.
Second.
Thank you, Sherry. So to provide some of the background on this, this whole motion and case, on August 18th of last year, MDU filed with the commission for approval of an application for a financial incentive related to two power purchase agreements with Minn Kota Power Cooperative for the purchase of electric capacity and energy from the Milton R. Young Unit 1 coal-fired electric generation facility. On October 27th, the Public Service Commission advocacy staff filed a recommendation regarding this application. They recommended denying the application. On December 15th, the commission issued a notice of hearing and scheduled a hearing for January 20th. And there was some specific issues identified in that notice. This is a totally new area of law, and so we identified the specific issues for consideration and making a decision on this, and they were whether the purchase agreements were for power from a new or existing facility using lignite mined in the state as its primary fuel. The second issue is whether the power purchase agreements are for power from a dispatchable on-demand generating unit, plant, or facility. The third issue is whether the purchase agreements were for power that will protect grid reliability. And if so, what is the reasonable rate for the financial incentive for the power purchase agreements? And is it appropriate for the financial incentive to be included in the company's existing generation resource recovery rider? So those are the five issues we identified to be considered at the hearing. We held that hearing on January 20th of 2022 in our hearing room. So just to get into some of the key facts here. MDU entered into two power purchase agreements on May 4th of 2020 and July 22nd of 2020 for to purchase capacity and energy from the Milton R. Young unit, and that those capacity and energy purchases would be effective from June 1st of 2021 through May 31st of 2026. So those agreements were negotiated and entered into in May and July of 2020. On August 1st of 2021, the Century Code changed, the law changed affecting this, and it added something. So the commission was always required to allow a public utility for new or existing facilities using lignite mined in the state as its primary fuel to recover in cost the rates of that power purchase agreement. The legislature added in the last session, and that law went into effect in August of 2021, that we are to include a financial incentive set at a reasonable rate for power purchase agreements of dispatchable on-demand generating unit, plant, or facility deemed to protect grid reliability that uses lignite mined in the state as its primary fuel. So that law was signed on April 13th of 2021 and became effective on August 1st of 2021. So therefore, MDU, if you recall, I earlier stated that they entered into those power purchase agreements prior to this law even being introduced in the legislature and prior to it becoming effective. MDU is currently recovering the costs of the PPAs through the fuel and purchase power adjustment rider. And so those power purchase items are not a rate base item. There are not, there's no capital investment required in them. So they're essentially passed through costs that are paid for customers through the fuel and purchase power adjustment rider. The Milton R. Young unit is an existing facility near center. It's supplied from mine mouth source of lignite fuel. Therefore, the commission finds that these power purchase agreements are for power from an existing facility using lignite mined in the state as its primary fuel. This unit also provides baseload energy supplying power that is highly reliable and firm. As a result, the commission finds that the PPAs are for power from a dispatchable on-demand generating unit, plant, or facility. This unit can deliver energy to the transmission system on a demand basis. It helps to control transmission system voltage. It provides ancillary service in the area and remains available to support local customers. Milton R. Young also is a mine mouth generating unit that provides additional protection from fuel supply disruption. Based on these factors, the commission finds that the Milton R. Young unit protects grid reliability. Advocacy staff testified in this case that approval of a financial incentive would only be to increase shareholder profits, not to incent or induce the action of entering a PPA. And therefore, a financial incentive is not warranted in the case. MDU, for its part, proposed that a financial incentive of a total financial incentive of 9.65% authorized return on equity would be appropriate. Advocacy staff submitted that if the commission chooses to apply financial incentive, reasonable rate of financial incentive should not be the rate of return as proposed by the company. The rate of return that normally applies to rate base or capital investments is set to be commensurate with a risk that is absent in this scenario. Advocacy staff provided that a reasonable rate of financial incentive should be the risk-free rate of return, which is often set at the Treasury bill rate. And they testified that the Treasury bill rate is currently around 0.58% or 1/10 of the amount requested by Montana Dakota. Montana Dakota proposes to recover the incentive through its existing generation resource cost recovery. So I want to read some of the discussion of this in the order. Prior to the passage of Senate Bill 2206 during the last legislative session, utilities were allowed to recover the costs of purchase power agreements and capacity agreements through the fuel and purchase power adjustment rider. What the legislature changed, as I mentioned earlier, is that the new legislation required the commission to permit a utility to recover a financial incentive set at a reasonable rate in addition to the cost of the PPAs for facilities that meet the criteria. A financial incentive is a means to encourage new action. In determining a reasonable financial incentive, the amount should be rationally tailored to the risk presented by the investment and induced action that it induces, really. This can be differentiated from just a reasonable rate of return approved through cost-based rate making, which includes compensation to shareholders for their capital investments and the associated risk. It is foreseeable that the approved weighted average cost of capital may in the future be a reasonable incentive to induce action in many cases, subject to factors that would provide a basis for upward or downward adjustments. In the current case, however, the weighted average cost of capital is not a reasonable incentive. The Commission recognizes that the approval of a financial incentive under this new law may always be somewhat retrospective due to the nature of rate regulation. The PPAs in this case, however, were signed 6 months before the legislation was even drafted, 9 months before it was passed into law, and 12 months before the law became effective. MDU had already signed those power purchase agreements, which means they had evaluated them and deemed them to be effective long before this law was ever even considered. So clearly, the possibility of a future financial incentive had no bearing on the company's decision to enter into these PPAs. Therefore, it would be unreasonable to approve a substantial financial incentive that has no connection to the conduct that occurred or showing that the conduct was induced at least by the anticipation of a financial incentive. The Commission concludes that several factors, including the shorter term of the PPA, the lack of associated risk in this case, and most importantly, the lack of connection between the action and financial incentive provide that a reasonable financial incentive should be minor, if anything. The Commission also concludes that a proxy value of the risk-free rate of return is an appropriate incentive for the current circumstances. So, therefore, the Commission has jurisdiction in this hearing. The PPAs are for power from a newer existing facility using lignite mine. They're from power from a dispatchable on-demand generating unit. The PPAs are for power that will protect grid reliability. And a reasonable rate for a financial incentive is the five-year treasury rate, the time of this filing of MDU's application, which was approximately 0.79%. And this also finds that it is reasonable for Montana, Dakota to recover this incentive in its generation resource cost recovery rider. So that's basically what this order then calls for. It approves this and provides a financial incentive at the rate of 0.79%. So I just want to offer some additional comments and then I'll turn it over to my colleagues. During the legislative session, I supported the concept in general to encourage our utilities to look at meeting their capacity needs through power purchase agreements with existing coal facilities in our state that have excess power versus building their own new capacity resources. This obviously would hold down costs for customers and would help our existing coal fire generation facilities operate more efficiently and economically. Keeping our in-state plants online helps support not only our North Dakota economy, but more importantly, lower costs for our customers and grid reliability for our customers. This idea was brought forward by folks in the industry because they recognize that utilities have really without this incentive, a disincentive to enter into PPAs for capacity needs because they don't earn a return on them. There's no capital investment required on a PPA and they don't own the asset. So it isn't included in the rates. So they don't make an earning on it. So that's what this incentive was intended to compensate for and allow the utilities to look at what existing resources we have that might be operating up under their full capacity and purchase some of that capacity on them. Just makes sense for the system as a whole. In this case, though, MDU clearly didn't need a financial incentive to enter into these contracts. They had already evaluated them and determined that they met the needs of customers without any sort of financial incentive. And they met the needs of the system without that incentive. They had already signed into them long before, a full 12 months before this became law, and even 6 months before the concept was discussed by the legislature. In the hearing, MDU pointed out repeatedly that the law requires us to provide a financial incentive, and it does include the language that the commission shall provide a financial incentive, and this is true. But it also lets us determine what is a reasonable rate. I believe the most reasonable rate is the risk-free rate of return as proposed here, 0.79%, and recognizes the risk. This rate recognizes the risk involved and the role the incentive played in encouraging this entering into this contract, which was zero. So for that reason, I propose this financial incentive and hope that my colleagues will support it. I will say that the I do have some details on the amounts that this actually will require. The MDU's proposal would have resulted in approximately a total cost of about $346,000 over the course of this PPA. The original proposal by Commissioner Christman would have been about $173,000. And this one proposed by me is about $34,000 or just about $35,000 over the course of the next 5 years of the PPA, which again, I believe is appropriate, recognizing the risk that the company has in this case and the role that the financial incentive played in encouraging the company to enter into these contracts. That concludes my comments.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, I'm going to vote against this because I think we should still go back to the original that I was going to propose. And if I had at least been able to get a second for the purpose of discussion, I would have pointed some of these things out, but I wasn't, so I'm going to do it now. My proposal actually was about midway in between. The company had proposed 6.9 something, whatever it was, and I was going to propose a halfway point of 3.5. I think what we're doing here is going to be deemed as really insulting to legislators and to a lot of the public that is concerned about long-term grid reliability. They came in with legislation calling for a rate of return on these things. It was commission that they trusted to use our knowledge and change from rate of return to a reasonable rate to let us to use some judgment. So now we take that and use the reasonable rate at next to nothing. I mean, essentially, for a company of this size, giving them nothing or giving them $30,000 is almost the same thing. I just think way disappointing. I don't disagree with you that this law did not incent these two power purchase agreements. They did them beforehand, no doubt about it. But the fact of the matter is the legislation doesn't say that it has to be for contracts signed after August 1st of 2021. We got them to change it to reasonable rate instead of rate of return, which would have taken our discretion out of the amount part of it. But it then goes on to point out that it's for power purchase agreements of, as you had said, a dispatchable on-demand generating unit, plant, or facility deemed to protect grid reliability. This does those things. So yes, in this case, they didn't have to get forced or leveraged into it by the legislation, but they did what the law is wanting them to do on their own, and we're giving them next to nothing of a reward for it. I certainly, with no risk, I certainly don't think that this merits the full amount that they were asking for, the 6.7%. But I do think somewhere in the middle, in that range of, near 3.5 is a much more appropriate amount. Again, I emphasize they're doing what the law set out to encourage companies to do. They're doing PPAs with a facility utilizing lignite coal mined in the state for dispatchable on-demand generating units, and where the power will protect grid reliability. I just think that this amount is inadequate. And so I'm going to vote against the substitute motion.
Some thoughts in response to that. I think it's important to point out that advocacy staff strongly opposed this, and advocacy staff is the one ultimately with the sole purpose of looking out for the public interest, including customers. And they described it as purely, and if approved, would ultimately only line the pockets of the shareholders at the expense of the ratepayers. I do not believe that the legislators intended that in any way, shape, or form. They want to incentivize companies to look at power purchase agreements of existing capacity. MGU had already done that and determined that even at the rate that they were entering into those contracts, it made perfect sense for their company without any incentive. And I don't think that the legislature intended this to be a way for the companies to just make more money for their shareholders to do what they had already determined to be the right thing. So I agree with you that it definitely is important for these utilities that we regulate to look at the existing resources and the PPAs, and to the extent that it they might be further enticed to build versus use existing capacity, then this will hopefully provide them an incentive to use what's already available and to help invest in quote unquote existing resources. And that was what I believe was intended by the legislation. The original proposed legislation was brought forward by industry. The legislature did not, I think, have a lot of background to even understand or fully contemplate the impact of a full rate of return incentive. And we've strongly came forward with input on that to say, that's too high. I mean, that might not work for this. We need a lot more flexibility to consider that. And had it not been for that, I would have opposed this altogether. So I just think that it's not appropriate to provide a significant incentive for something that already happened. I agree that we're talking about it's not a significant incentive, but the principle of the matter is you'd be basically taking money from ratepayers, giving it to shareholders for something that the company had already deemed to be in the best interest of the company and its ratepayers. So I just don't think that's appropriate. I will look at future cases very differently, I think. But in this case, I tend to agree much stronger with advocacy staff and believe that it's not appropriate to provide much of an incentive at all.
Well, if we do this, I am kind of doubtful whether there will be any future cases to look at. You mentioned advocacy staff. They do an awesome job for our agency and for the people that they're really representing, the consumers, no doubt about it. And I don't dispute their conclusion that whatever we give them, whether it's 0.79% or 7%, or as I'm proposing, somewhere in between, is going to benefit the investors. But they didn't take their analysis far enough, because here is the other part of it. What the utility companies are going to see is a sure thing. If they go out and invest in something else, they'll get their rate of return. And what they can see here is that we are going to wordsmith things in ways that deny them a reasonable return. You had said significant, you know, that acknowledging this is not a significant amount. Well, if they're not going to get anything significant, they might as well invest in something that they will, that will cost the ratepayers even more and will not provide the dependability, will not provide the voltage needed and those types of things, will not come from North Dakota Resources. I just think that this, we're doing what I'm suggesting will benefit ratepayers is by sending this message to our utilities that we are in fact going to look at this and look for a reasonable amount, not something that is not even considered significant.
I disagree. I think the order very clearly states that we'll look at different incentive levels on future cases where an actual incentive is needed. And if the utilities read this very short order and come away thinking that they're never going to get anything meaningful, then that would be a very inaccurate interpretation of clear language in the order. So I just think that's an exaggeration and not true. I also think, you know, MDU could have very easily not come forward and requested this for something they had already done. And then we'd have a different test case. But they did. And we have to do our very best job at evaluating the facts in this case, which I think very clearly show that no incentive was needed for them to enter into those power purchase agreements. And furthermore, we have the integrated resource planning process in place where we'll be having these kind of conversations with the utilities further in advance of these kinds of decisions. And I hope that we can bring those sorts of things to the table ourselves if the company doesn't.
Good morning. This is Commissioner Haugen Hufford. I would like to add a couple comments. When listening to both of you, I concur with Commissioner Fedorchak, and I'm not going to repeat some of her comments that she has made, but I just want to reflect that I believe the statute is forward-looking, and I'm very optimistic, Commissioner Christman, that the companies will look at this as an opportunity and look forward and not be hindered by this. I agree that MDU already had these PPAs in place. I think we did our due diligence that the legislative asked us, that we shall look at it and apply a reasonable rate. And I believe Commissioner Fedorchak's proposal is reasonable. And I am going to support this and be optimistic that the intent of the legislation that was passed, that utility companies will be optimistic and forward thinking on this and submit and find us to be very reasonable. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay.
Nay.
Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Commissioner Christman, was that the last item in your portfolio?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Steve, I'm going to ask you to help me with agenda because I don't have it pulled right up. Are we at the end of the regular agenda?
We are.
Okay. Let's see. So now I don't have the list for announcements. Does anybody else have the list up and care to point out anything coming forward? Steve or Randy or Sherry, do you have the list of future items?
I don't in front of me.
I do. Just looking at our agenda, excuse me for a few minutes, seconds.
Any big things in the next 2 weeks? Maybe anything substantial in the next 2 weeks?
Our regular commission meeting is on the 4th. Formal hearing on May 5th. Bridger Pipeline 6-inch crude oil in Golden Valley. A siting application.
Sounds good. All right. With that,
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Does Commissioner Christman wish to do a dissenting opinion?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. All right. With that, I think we can close our regular part of the meeting and take any questions that any media might have on who